නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Actually, last time we started another interesting sutta. This is Upakkilesa Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 128. And the incident we have discussed a little in detail last time. Basically, while Buddha was in Kosambi, there was a conflict between two groups of monks. And then Buddha tried to admonish them, but they didn't respect, they didn't accept. And then Buddha want to abandon them because they are not even listening to the teacher, listening to the Buddha. So he decided to abandon them and leave to a different place. Now he is leaving. On the way, he met Venerable Bhagu at Balakalona Khara, another place. And there he asked whether Venerable Bhagu is living comfortably, and then he mentioned that he is doing well. He receives the Pindapatha, the alms, without any trouble. So then Buddha advised him further on the Dhamma, and then he leaves him. And now he arrives another place where Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbila are living harmoniously. So, an interesting point here that the garden keeper or the park keeper saw Buddha, but he didn't want to allow him because he warned those three monks with whom that now he is familiar with, and he was quite happy about them, and he warned them to be involved in their practice so that he doesn't want anyone to come and disturb them. As a result of that, so he didn't allow Buddha even to come in. And by the way, Venerable Anuruddha heard this discussion, and then he came immediately and informed the park keeper that this is our teacher, please allow him to come in. And then Buddha approached, and further Venerable Anuruddha informed Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbila, and they too come. And one of them took the Buddha's ball, another maybe the robe, another have prepared the water, someone has washed his feet, another person prepared a seat. So likewise, every typical functions that anyway when a senior monk, a teacher is approaching, that monks are supposed to do, so they are doing well. And after everything is fine, then Buddha asks whether they are doing well, whether they receive the alms food well, and all these things he asks. And they also answer that yes, they are receiving good support. And after that, he mentioned whether you are living harmoniously, he's asking. Now they are telling that yes, they are surely living harmoniously, and again with mutual appreciation, without any kind of disputes, and blending like milk and water, weaving each other with kindly eyes. Now this is something that Buddha didn't find at the Kosambi, so that's why he came out. But here at this particular bamboo grove where Venerable Anuruddha, Venerable Nandiya and Venerable Kimbila were residing, so they were living really harmoniously, and they are quite cordial to each other. And therefore Buddha asked from them further information, so how are you living like this? So then they further explained that how they are helping each other and how they do the various duties, and all these things they explain. And further he mentioned that every 5 days they do a Dhamma discussion, and again they are very much like different in body but very much similar in the mind. So that information Venerable Anuruddha informed, And when Buddha inquired from the other monks, so they too inform the same thing, same manner they are also explaining. So very much like they are living really harmoniously, and Buddha really appreciate that. And then Buddha asked an interesting question. So if you are doing all this really well, how about your practice? So now one blessing is to live harmoniously, live peacefully. So that is one thing, samaggānan tapo sukho. That's a very familiar statement. When the monks are living peacefully, then that is a very conducive, that produce very conducive environment for the meditation. So that is something Buddha recommended. And now he is asking, how is your practice? By the way, at this time, Venerable Anuruddha is still training himself. And he is none of them are still arahants, it seems. And therefore, he is still having some problems related to the samadhi. So likewise, I mean, we discuss about four types of samadhi in the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta. One type is based on the, actually two types are based on samatha, tranquility meditation, where Buddha mentioned one may dwell harmoniously, peacefully and happily in this very life using one type of samadhi, that is particularly the jhana. And the second one is actually for the clairvoyance or the divine eye. So that is also Buddha explained as a second one. So both of them are related to the samatha. And then the last two are related to vipassana, where one type is developing fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension, and further development of that cause to reduce or abandon all the fetters. So that is the fourth one. So likewise, we learn these things in the Samadhi Bhavana Sutta. And here, actually, Venerable Anuruddha is trying the first two and basically the second one, where he wants to arouse, or he wants to master the divine eye. Now he is explaining something he is facing, some troubles or some problems he is facing in this divine eye. So later, actually, after he became an arahant, he became foremost in the divine eye. Probably you have heard about that. So Venerable Anuruddha is the foremost in divine eye. But now you can see how he is trying his best. He is training his best. So it is not that he got the skill immediately or kind of based on his luck or fortune. Rather, he tried his best and he did various exercises and he tried many different ways to master it. So that mastering part is what now he is continuing, and he still have some issues. So that particular issue he is now explaining to the Buddha. So he mentioned, so right now he has some vision, and some time he has light as well. Now this is talking about divine eye. For that, it seems one has to have a fair amount of light. So that light means the mind-made light, and using which one can have a fair amount of vision. Now the problem is, he sometimes have light but not the vision. Sometimes he has vision but not enough light. As a result of that, he can't see the vision clearly. So very much like he now wants to master these two components, light and the vision, now he wants to master. Now he is explaining this to the Buddha. So when he wants light, sometimes it disappears. When he wants vision, sometimes it disappears. So how to have same or rather necessary amount of light and vision so that the vision is fairly clean, fairly clear. So that is the problem he is having. He don't know how to balance these two. Now Buddha himself has gone through the same exercise. Now he is explaining this to Venerable Anuruddha. He is mentioning, as Anuruddha, I was abiding diligent, ardent and resolute. I perceived both light and vision of forms. Soon afterward, the light and the vision of forms disappeared. So that is something Buddha himself has faced. So now he is explaining how he overcome that problem. And in order to overcome that, he found that certain upakkilesas or imperfections have to be abandoned. Now the samadhi is one result, vision is one result, say the light is one result, but they dependent on so many other conditions, so many other factors, so many other skills or wholesome states. Now Buddha explained one by one. So as he continuing mastering divine eye, so what he found as the upakkilesa, what he found as the certain imperfections making this clairvoyance or divine eye makes little trouble. But the first one he mentioned is the doubt. So the first one he mentioned is the doubt. So doubt is something that he mentioned as a upakkilesa, what you call as imperfection, because sometimes the problem is in disguise of wisdom, doubt arises. Panya mukhena vichikicha vancheti. So this is one interesting point. So sometimes we think that we are sort of exploring or investigating because of the wisdom. But unfortunately, underneath, what is available is doubt. So that is what Buddha mentioned here. So sometimes I found I have various doubts. So these doubts are causing as an imperfection for this clairvoyance, for this divine eye. So I found that sometimes I start thinking, sometimes I start doubtful, skeptic about various things, that is causing me to have imperfect clairvoyance. So that Buddha mentioned to Venerable Aniruddha. So this is one point that you need to recognize, one imperfection that you need to recognize. Careful about this particular doubt. And then the second one Buddha explained is the inattention or amanasikara. Now, as you can see, actually, when one is developing a samadhi based on this kind of light, so that light has to be properly balanced. At the same time, as a result of light, now certain vision is going to happen. Now one has to pay enough attention to that vision. Then only the vision would be clear. Because attention, manasikara, is something that you are very much like diverting your attention, your focus to a particular area, so that the information or detail available is visible, available. But if you are not paying enough attention, if your attention is weak, or if your attention is diverted, distracted to something else, then again the vision is imperfect. So now Buddha pointing out as the second imperfection, so that is the inattention. Now, inattention on the other hand is one thing sometimes we make use of in order to abandon various defilements. Say for example, when a certain defilement arises in the mind, so if we continuously pay attention to that, sometimes it fades away, because we have mindfulness, we have some already developed vipassana, the insights. As a result of that, when the defilements arise, if you pay attention, they start fading away. So similarly, if you pay enough attention to this particular whatever the phenomena, say as a result of visions rather the light, now you start visualizing something, now you are paying enough attention to that, as a result of that the necessary adjustments, refinements might happen, and you are able to clearly recognize whatever the things available in that direction. Now as a result of that, now you have clairvoyance, now you have divine eye. But if you are not paying enough attention to that particular area, then you can't see it. So Buddha mentioned, so this inattention is something as an imperfection that I have found. So instead of inattention, now I have to pay attention. So now doubt is one thing, inattention is another thing. So both of them appear like imperfections, upakkilesas. And so I recognize both of them as upakilesas. So that is now as a second imperfection Buddha explained to Venerable Anuruddha. And then Buddha mentioned Srottan Topa. So Srottan Topa we all know as a hindrance. So as we are continuing in our path, so if there are no much events, if there are no much incidents, and if there is no enough work to the mind, then slowly mind get into the Srottan Topa. Mind become little lethargic, mind become drowsy, and as a result of that, ultimately we go to sleep. Then of course the clairvoyance is not at all possible, because mind is very much like gloomy, mind is drowsy and lethargic. And particularly it may be really important in this clairvoyance, because if you consider Srottan Topa, light is completely opposite to that. So if someone is lethargic, someone is subjected to Srottan Topa, one advice typically we give is you better expose yourself to light rather than you meditating at a gloomy space, gloomy place. You better go out, you can enjoy the environment, you can look at some illuminated area, and you probably switch on a light where you are meditating. So likewise, the whole area surrounding has to be fairly illuminated, then you can overcome Srottan Topa. But unfortunately, if Srottan Topa is too powerful, then actually you may fall asleep. Now here, when Buddha is explaining clairvoyance or divine eye, so he recognized this Srottan Topa as a main problem, as one of the imperfection, because if Srottan Topa is powerful, then you can't have enough light. Now you can understand, now this particular light here we are talking is not some external light. This light has to be generated within the process, within the meditation. One has to arouse this light. So if one's Srottan Topa is powerful, then you can't generate this light. Actually, light and Srottan Topa are completely opposite to each other. So if one is subjected to Srottan Topa, then one can't generate light. So therefore Buddha mentioned here Srottan Topa is another imperfection. So now Venerable Anuruddha is learning from Buddha, because Buddha himself has went through all these troubles, and he himself was training as a Bodhisattva, and now he is explaining how he sort of recognized these imperfections. So it is not therefore simply light and vision that we need to be careful, rather there are various other conducive factors to be fulfilled in order to have clear proper divine eye. And then further Buddha explains fear as another imperfection. So if the fear is available, then Buddha mentioned again this divine eye is not possible. Now you need to understand, I mean, even though here we are talking about clairvoyance and divine eye, it may not be necessary that we are trying to generate it. I mean, none of us are having it today. There may be very, very rarely someone may have this clairvoyance or divine eye. But the idea here is to understand, even when we are doing or practicing Anapanasati, even when we are practicing, say, Dhatu Manasikara, element meditation, or if you are practicing even Vedana Anupassana, mindfulness on feelings, even if you are practicing Chitta Anupassana, mindfulness of the mind, even if you are practicing walking meditation. Now, the theme or the objective may be one thing, but there may be various other conducive conditions. Those are to be satisfied. Then only the exercise would be successful. Then only the meditation would be successful. If those imperfections, if certain conditions are not happen, not met properly, then our result, our exercise may not be successful. So therefore, even in any kind of meditation, it could be Samatha meditation, it could be Vipassana meditation, we need to understand what are the conducive conditions. And those are to be addressed, those are to be fulfilled, then only the result will be satisfied. Now same thing applies here. Now Buddha explains to Venerable Anuruddha related to the divine eye. So Buddha has found these different imperfections. If they are available, then Buddha mentioned, okay, you are in trouble. You can't have proper divine eye. So in order to have proper divine eye, so these imperfections has to be abandoned. So one thing is the doubt. Second one is inattention. Now the third one is what you call this sortantopa. Now the fourth one Buddha mentioned as fear. Now when fear is there, Buddha mentioned, again mind is not settled. Because you know, when the mind is going through some fear, so it always little imbalance the mind. So mind become little agitated, mind become little frustrated, mind become somewhat wavering. So the proper ease or calmness, peacefulness of the mind is not available because it is going through some fluctuations because of the fear. So therefore Buddha mentioned, he understood fear also is another factor making the divine eye imperfect, making the divine eye unsuccessful. So if you don't have fear, then of course you are in a very smooth, relaxed, calm kind of a mentality, then you can continue. But if in case fear is available, then it is really difficult for one to have the divine eye. So therefore Buddha mentioned fear is also another imperfection where he understood, and he gave a small simile here that if one is being followed by murderers, and from both sides, a man who is knowing that there are two murderers going to come and try to kill him, then he can't have peaceful mind because he is always doubtful, little anxious, little agitated, because he never know when these two people are going to kill him. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so likewise, if one's mind is subjected to fear, then he can't have proper samadhi, he can't have perfect samadhi, he can't have divine eye. And now Buddha mentioned another point that is called elation. So piti, so or excessive piti, excessive kind of happiness, if one has, so then Buddha mentioned that is also a problem. Because sometimes the samadhi, when it is powerful, it could be causing to generate a lot of elation, lot of say piti, pleasure. So the pleasurable feelings can overwhelm the yogi. So that is something sometimes happen. So people are really elated, they are really uplifted, so their minds are fairly uplifted, but ultimately they lose the balance because this pleasure is not only limited to the mind, it can even little disturb the body. So the bodily calmness also might be disturbed, because now you might be going through some goosebumps, maybe waves like things, pressurable sensations, so all these things are available, so that may cause ultimately to lose the mind, the balance of the mind. When the pleasure is available, or the pleasurable feelings are available, happiness is available, so we can simply step back and watch it. So that is what Buddha recommended in Satipatthana, where we understand pleasurable feelings also as another category or another type of feelings. Rather than we attach to that, or rather than we become overwhelmed by that. So what we need to do is simply step back and watch it. And in a way we are doing Vedananupassana. So that is being highlighted even in the Anapanasati Sutta, where Buddha explained the Vedananupassana section. Piti patisangvedi asasisamiti sikkhati, sukha patisangvedi asasisamiti sikkhati. So all these things are emphasizing how one is not being elated by either rapture or either happiness. Rather, one is able to step back and watch it objectively. So rather than one become too attached to it, overwhelmed by that, involved with it, now what one does is simply step back and watch it. So that it may happen, but you are not disturbed by that. You are not getting overwhelmed by that. So Buddha gave a very interesting simile here. So when one is searching for a hidden treasure, now he is searching for a door, an, a kind of an access, entrance to that hidden treasure. But interestingly, he found 5 entrances to the hidden treasure. But he was searching so hard, a single entrance point, entry point to the hidden treasure. But immediately he found 5 of them. Now he becomes really elated. So that's what Buddha gives as an example. So when one is actually continuing one's meditation, so this kind of things could be possible, because you are trying so hard, all this time you didn't find any kind of a solution, all this time you are struggling, still mind is distracting, and maybe now only you have certain amount of say samadhi, now only you get some amount of light. Assume now you start visualizing. Immediately you get really, really happy, because all this time you were trying so hard, but now only you got the results. But this result itself can cause little disturbance or little turbulence in the mind, because you were trying so hard, now only the result came. You are so happy about it. So that happiness you can't maintain, that elation, so mind becomes so elated, so as a result of that you lose the balance. So therefore Buddha mentioned, elation is something that he found as an imperfection. So he mentioned, therefore, you need to be careful about that. So even when you are successful, when pleasure and happiness arise, so you need to properly balance it. Rather than getting overwhelmed by that success, now you need to simply quieten the mind. Simply calm down the mind. Relax the mind, so that you are able to continue. Rather, sometimes what typically happens is, especially when as navakas, as the newcomers to the practice, when one is getting successful, he becomes really overwhelmed by the result, by the success, and as a result of that, that becomes an hindrance, that becomes an imperfection for the very success of the process. Now everything collapses, your mind get distracted, so all the problems are there. Now you need to slowly calm down again, might have to start from the beginning. So all these problems are there because we don't know how to handle the result. When the result is successful, we become elated, we become extremely happy, ultimately we lose the balance. Now further Buddha mentioned as inertia. So maybe inertia, maybe kind of we can have kind of a shades of sloth and torpor, because so sometimes mind doesn't have enough energy, and you don't have much power to move forward, and so those kind of problems can happen. So the mind is not active. So there are certain shades of sloth and torpor here. But anyway, Buddha mentioned something as inertia. So all these are different factors he found, little concerns that one has to have. So you can see, I mean, it is not simply by wish, simply by fortune, simply by a parami that one can have everything. But one has to use one's critical analysis in a way. One has to evaluate one's process, one's this meditation process, as it is going on. In the middle of the process, one has to see how things are happening. So in a way, we can say mindfulness is playing a pivotal role here, because it is the one monitoring the whole process. It monitors the whole process and tell us, okay, now this is little, this is excess, this is necessary, this is not available, or this is available, but you are not having it enough, or this is too much. So likewise, the whole process being monitored using mindfulness. Probably you can remember when we were discussing about the Bhujangas in the Satipatthana Sutta, we discuss about 7 Bhujangas, and among them mindfulness is the one necessary every time. And again, the other 6 Buddha divides into 2 categories. One is actually making the mind too active, and the other category, another group, is making the mind more kind of peaceful. So these two groups, the one which is making active and one which is making more concentrated, calm, quiet, have to be balanced. Otherwise, when calmness is too much, when the peacefulness or samadhi is too much, you might get into sloth and torpor. On the other hand, if active part is too much, then the mind might go to even agitation. So therefore, we can understand, even at the Bodhjanga level, we have to balance it. And now at the Samatha meditation, again Buddha mentioned how these various imperfections are to be balanced. And Buddha now mentioned about the energy. So this is quite familiar to us, because we discussed this in the Sona Sutta. In the Sona Sutta also, Buddha mentioned how Venerable Sona needs to balance what you call this energy, because if you put too much energy, then it's caused to generate restlessness in the mind. And again, if you don't have enough energy, it may cause to arise kind of drowsiness, sotan torpor, or kind of lethargic state of the mind. Now, at that time, to Venerable Sona, Buddha gave an interesting simile of tuning a lute, where he is asking if the strings are too tight, whether they can produce the same or the proper tune, proper song or proper tone. But Venerable Sona explained it is not, if it is too tight, it may not produce that proper tone. On the other hand, Buddha asked if the strings are too tight, whether it produced the proper tone. Then again Buddha mentioned, Venerable Sona mentioned, no, even if they are loose, then they can't produce proper tone. So then Buddha mentioned that is like that Venerable Sona, that the lute has to be balanced by tightening the strings properly, moderately, to their necessary amount. Similarly, Buddha mentioned the effort have to be balanced. Or in general, all the faculties are to be balanced. Indriya samatha. All the indriyas, all the faculties are to be balanced, then only you are being successful. Now here Buddha gave a different simile, not the lute, but a different simile. He's mentioning how one may grip a quail, how one may catch a quail. So there he mentioned, if he is putting excessive energy, holding the quail too tightly using both hands, because of that too tight holding, the quail might even die. But on the other hand, if he is not putting enough energy, then the quail may go out, he may fly away, because you are not properly catching it, properly holding it, not putting enough energy. So you can see, holding a quail with the necessary amount of grip, it's a kind of an art in a way, kind of a skill one has to maintain. If he doesn't put enough energy, then it will, because of the loose grip, it will fly out. But on the other hand, if one is strongly holding it, then that also is a problem, then the quail may even die. So likewise, Buddha mentioned here, so you have to put proper energy, proper effort, necessary effort. You can't have excess effort, you can't have loose effort, you have to have the moderate effort. So I think today I like to stop here. There are a little noise coming, so I thought of probably we can start the discussion. So if we have some questions, then we can ask, we can discuss. So now I like to stop the session here. So I like to open the session for questions.
Like to join the Q&A, you may raise your hand or you can also send via chat. So I'd like to invite Namika for the first question.
Yeah, Teruan Sarnai.
I've got this cold and cough too, so I might sound funny too. Just wanted to recap the last few months. As you're saying, it sounds like a lot of balancing that needs to go on.
Yeah.
From my understanding, now it's using this particular method, it's been about, I think, just over 6 months.
You mean the method as the meditation technique now you are using, Satipatthana?
Yeah, looking at the body and what it sees and smells and what it emotes. If you're in a happy state, you don't indulge in it. If you're sad, that's transient, And the mind in itself, is it even your mind? It's like a universal mind, right? Even if it's a samadhi state, it seems like it may not be the thinking mind, but it is a mind, and it's a bit of like yogic entertainment kind of thing. So when you assess all these dhammas, everything seems to be can be a teacher as well. Is this process in itself the process to kind of kill the person,
The like process, sorry? Or, kill the person?
Because it's very technical, You're seeing things as, you've broken it down into parts. So, is this process itself the culling of the person? That you kind of made up?
Yeah. Actually, this we can say like this. Because of our ignorance, we are preparing a person, we are making a person, we are constructing an individual. So that construction process we are now slowly revealing. Unknowingly, we are continuously constructing a person. So, that has become a habit and we were ignorant about that process. Now, because of the practice, now we become more and more little evident, little aware of this construction process. Now, rather than promoting that preparation, now we start simply abandoning that process. We are not promoting that process. We are not going to accept that self-making process. Rather, we, with a smile, we understand, how this mind is tricky and trying to delude us. It's a kind of a deluded process. For example, like this. Now, when you consider a house, so using bricks, using cement, using sand, using metal, using asbestos, and so many components, now we are slowly building a house. And ultimately, we call it as a house. So similarly, in ourselves also, using these bodily physical parts, then using different feelings, using our own different perceptions, feelings, etc., etc. Now we are building a person. Now Buddha's teaching, in a way vipassana, help us to dismantle this whole thing and look at different streams, how this particular stream is causing to build a person, how another stream is causing to build a person. So likewise, now we understand, these are the different components, different streams, ultimately helping to construct a person. And it happened time to time. Previously we may be doing it quite often, but now probably we may understand, time to time this self-construction process happened. Now we are able to trace it, we are able to be aware of that process. When we are aware, now we are not promoting it. So we are able to catch it. We are able to catch how mind is trying to play tricks. And now we are not promoting a self-view. As a result of that, now kind of a harmonious living is available. Kind of pure awareness is available. Simple, field of awareness is available, but we are not quite often getting trapped or getting deluded by the eye-making, mind-making. So as a result of that, what happens? So this mind-made I start dissolving. The person, individual, I, which is based upon the ignorance, now become not much strong. So it become little diluted, it become little gone to the background. But time to time we still prepare an I, but we can notice that. We can be aware of that. And we are not promoting that. So the eye making has become so a little weaker, so that the simple living may be continuing, the simple awareness may be continuing, but there is no self, an individual manifested through all these different aggregates or sense bases, so that the generation of I, a person, is fairly stopped now. I mean, we can't say completely stopped, but that may be completely stopped when one becomes an arahant. But till that, time to time, due to various reasons, using different aggregates, probably eye-making, mind-making happens. But when one is aware of that process, now one is not promoting that. Yeah.
Slightly strange way to live, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you keep looking at these tendencies or these things that arise, I mean, say you're looking at defilements, right? Like, mm-hmm. if anger arises, then you're kind of, you know, you mm-hmm. observe it and, yeah, it does dissipate.
Mm.
And then you can look at your general foolishness. But desire, I mean, everything is desire. I mean, listening to a Dhamma talk is desire.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how much of that can you observe?
Yeah, I mean, when an urge happens within you, when a desire happens within you, so you can see whether this is a wholesome desire, whether this is related to Dhamma. I mean, you can't abandon immediately the desire. Now, Buddha even mentioned, and Indral Ananda mentioned in one of the suttas, Tanhang Nisaya Tanha Pahatabhu. So you are using even kind of a craving, ultimately to abandon the craving. So we are practicing maybe based on some amount of craving. So I want to become a Sotapanna, I want to become an Arahant. So this is also a kind of a driving process. But ultimately, as we are continuing, this very driving force, this very desire, is subjected to kind of a scrutiny, subjected to our own observation. So as a result of that, it becomes also a little, calm, relaxed. So that's why Buddha mentioned, when one becomes an Arahant, so that the brahmacharya esana patipassadhya, so what you were having continuously, now you want to completely uproot defilements, completely abandon ignorance, so those kinds of necessities, those kind of requirements ultimately become completely ceased, completely appeased. Now say, for example, you had a thirst and now you are drinking some water. So as you are drinking water slowly, then your thirst become completely quenched, satisfied, now not available. Then ultimately, when you are drinking the last sip of water, so now all the thirst you had is completely gone. Now that means, I mean, you need water to satisfy it or to quench it, and ultimately it is gone. So similarly, when the delusion, when the ignorance is completely abandoned, then you don't need further practice. So you are an arahant. Then only Buddha mentioned, okay, this what you call brahmacharya esana. So esana means a kind of a quest, kind of a experiment that you are doing. So that being completely fulfilled, completed. Now you don't need further practice or further, say, quest. For the experiment is not required because everything has done. So likewise, so the completion of the process only, we can say all this driving would completely calm down the whole thing.
So just continue on like this?
Yeah, continue on at the same time. I mean, see how you are not frequently generating an I now. Now, say for example, a person who is not into practice, So they are promoting a self. As much as possible, they are promoting a self using various acquisitions, using various, say, medals, using someone else's praises, say, using social status, using designation. Likewise, so many factors are there to, say, shine as a person, shine as a personality. And this anger, lust, all these defilements are also promoting as a self. Because now you, whenever you feel angry, so that means you have become so active, your presence is fairly felt. But when the defilements are slowly abandoned, diluted, so your presence as an individual, as a separate person, so that is becoming less and less, so your presence is not that noticed in a way. So that's why we can say sometimes, Bhante Dhammajiva used to say, so you become simply a sand particle of the Ganges, something like that. So you, it is not that you are trying to promote a person, self-highlight, rather you become simple-minded, just a sand particle, something like that. So it's kind of a abandonment of this self-view, self-promotion, individuality, all these things. So actually they are the ones causing frustration. They are the ones causing little bit of, say, all these defilements, promoting defilements. But when asmimana, the conceit I am, is not available, so that is the narhant.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I have a question. Mahisha, you may unmute.
Sorry, Jennifer, I didn't hear my name.
No.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my question was relating to the talk that we had today.
Mm-hmm.
You said about, I think last week also you said that little bit thing about, you know, when you keep on meditating, the discussion between the Buddha and the other Thero about getting the light and then keep looking through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, keep doing it that way. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I heard it like in the past, like we keep on, you know, watching the sensations and then we get into this stage, yes? And then when we see the light,
No, actually we can't say, actually I can't agree directly on that, Mahisha. Because here what we are talking even today is based mainly on the samatha part. So where one has some amount of mastering of jhana, and now one is using certain skills of that to generate divine eye. Divine eye is a part of abhinya. So this may not be available for a vipassana yogi who is not into samatha practice. So actually, now, just because of this particular sutta's content, I am talking about it, but that doesn't mean that I am asking you all to practice divine eye. But we are learning using this discussion, using this particular sutta. Now, even in vipassana, so likewise, there are various other conducive conditions. Say, for example, when you are practicing chittanupassana, say you can't do it immediately telling that I am going to do chittanupassana. You need certain prerequisites to be satisfied, certain skills to be fulfilled, then only you can do it successfully. So that's being explained by the Buddha. Even in Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha mentioned, okay, if you don't have enough mindfulness, if you don't have enough clear comprehension, then it is useless to practice, no point of practicing, trying to practice chittanupassana. You may get basically driven by the thoughts. So first of all, we need to develop a fair amount of mindfulness using other easy techniques, clear comprehension using various other techniques, then you are competent to get on to chittanupassana. So likewise, not only in samatha, not only in this divine eye case, but in many other, all other vipassana oriented practices, we need fair amount of contribution coming from the other, say, sub factors. So that's why they are calling as the upakkilesa here. So if those sub-factors, I mean, one way we can say, whatever the necessary wholesome factors, they are to be fulfilled. On the other hand, unnecessary, unwholesome imperfections have to be abandoned. And this sutta is more oriented towards those imperfections. Buddha talking about the imperfections, which is causing some kind of a defect in your practice, some kind of a defect in your result. So this particular defect here happens because of these imperfections. Now Buddha recognized these different imperfections, particularly related to this discussion for the generation of divine night. But we can generalize it to any other practice. So that's why I want to highlight by discussing this sutta. I am not promoting divine eye. I am not asking you all to practice divine eye. And I am not also practicing divine eye. But rather using which what we can learn is. So whenever we are practicing, not only samatha, even vipassana. So these imperfections are possible. So we need to be a little careful of it. And we need to have a fair amount of mindfulness to recognize what is the situation right now, how is it happening properly, smoothly, I am continuing practice smoothly, things are getting successful, or any imperfection is making the thing little disturbed. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the point. That's the thing that I want to clear, because I always hear from you and the Goswami Nohan say the guidance that we got was whatever comes, just be yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Maintain your equanimity.
Right.
And focus on your equanimity and then watch what mind tries to do.
Mm-hmm.
So everything goes off then. So that's what I was, up to.
Right.
And then when I heard this, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this is something that we must do. Then it's clear.
Yeah.
Not that we have to do. This is something that you're telling us.
Exactly.
If you get this, this is how you have to handle it. That's
exactly
what you are trying to say.
Yes,
that's
yes,
all.
Yes. I mean, yeah, whatever true. We are okay. discussing here today is kind of a one sample situation.
Alarm. It's like giving you a caution, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly.
This
yeah.
might happen, might not, but if this happens, this is what you have to do, what Buddha said to do.
Yes,
right?
yes.
Yeah, I got the point. Yeah,
right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I would say, you said that you are telling to the other person, I think about, like, when you will say someone is quarreling, two people are quarreling and there's a big argument going on,
mm-hmm.
and you're there and you have a choice, like you involve with it to solve it, or you jump in and you get into it and drown in it, or you can just watch it, or you can be your own self and get into your, I used to say the word meditation mode,
mm-hmm.
mode, M-O-D-E.
Mm-hmm.
So you have choices like that.
Mm.
So, and also a while ago you said, I think when answering to me, that to get into your calmness or mindfulness, you need to use a couple of techniques, which actually, that's what you all were telling us to do,
mm-hmm.
Initially at the start.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep on practicing a couple of them, and depends on our capabilities and our abilities that we actually got hang of it.
Mm-hmm.
Would say a yogi will get hang of it.
Right.
They practice it.
Right.
In the way that they could.
Right.
So when it comes to a position for a particular yogi, that if I get him into the previous example of two people are quarreling and we are there, so if we can stay, watch it, and quickly be mindful about it, okay, this is not the right thing for me to get involved.
Right.
So I should stay where I am, and I should focus on my practice, and this is the advice I got, like, you shouldn't put yourself into that particular drama and then get drowned on it.
Right.
And you just can stay and you can put into your meditation mode. So if a particular yogi can get that thing into their mind and then can put to the meditation mode and be just like just a being, just be there. Physically you are there, but you're not in that whole drama, and you walk away and then you don't carry it either, and you just don't involve it at all with that. And if a person can do it like within like few minutes, is that what actually really we want to practice to be? That's what my question is.
I think it depends on the situation. So we can't say we always have to be passive.
What do you mean by passive? Like?
Passive means that, as you mentioned, say two people are quarreling. And we simply ignore them and we mind our own business.
Yeah.
So that's a thing that we, it depends. Now, so are we always doing that? Are we supposed to always do that?
No, I mean, I'll specifically give you the background of the situation.
Mm.
Say two people are quarreling, you're maybe on the train.
Mm.
Let's say you're on the train,
mm-hmm.
and there are other people as well, and two people are, you know, quarreling,
mm-hmm.
or fighting or whatever.
Yeah.
And that situation. And also we'll say you're walking on the road in a public place, and then same thing. Or we'll say you're walking with a friend and he or she got involved with another person,
mm.
and then started argument.
Mm-hmm.
So all three of those situations, I mean, it's, so maybe someone is the party who involved in the problem, maybe you know or you may not know, but
mm. yeah.
still if you can be in that same position.
Yeah. So actually, that's what I am telling. So it depends on the circumstances. We can't generalize the thing, telling that every time you have to mind your own business. You should not put your hand. You should not try to settle a conflict. You should never try to settle a conflict. You should allow them to quarrel. So you can't say like that. So it depends on the situation. That's why I assume that you are going with a friend, and friend is getting involved with an argument of another person, probably. Friend is a person probably who may listen to you, who may like to get an advice from you. So at that kind of a situation where you have some kind of a you can settle the situation, there is a chance that you can properly involve. And that Buddha has highlighted now. Say when we were discussing sila, morality part, in another sutta, so probably you can remember Pisunavacha Veramani, where Buddha mentioned, okay, you should never say speech in a way to divide a two group of people. But on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, you are on the other hand, on the opposite, you have to be a person who is generating peacefulness, generating concord, harmony among the group of the people. So that's why, I mean, if you understand, okay, if your presence, if your intervention can really settle the dispute, ease the dispute, and you can convince both parties settle it totally, you can make them again in concord, then no point, no problem in doing it. But the way to do it, how to do it, when to do it, so these are the things that we may have to be still concerned. So you can't immediately jump to the situation when they are in the full boiled hot argument. Probably if you're going to try and intervene, probably you also get into trouble. So likewise, we have to, depending on the situation, we ourselves have to use our common sense and see whether is this the point properly I need to intervene, or I better a little back off and let things happen, and later probably I might individually explain the situation to each one. Likewise, I mean, we have to find out a strategy depending on the situation. I mean, the strategy also may vary based on the situation. So likewise, we can't have a kind of a general principle here. Rather, depending on the situation, we can decide whether is it proper to intervene, help them to again become peaceful, concord, so that we can abandon the conflict. Or if we find out, okay, it is beyond my control, beyond my discretion, and they may not listen to me, then better I try to leave them. I am minding my own business. So that is something like that. Now, I mean, something similar happened even this story in the Kosambi. So two groups of monks are in conflict, and another monk come and inform the Buddha. Now Buddha tried to settle it, Buddha summoned both groups of monks, and he tried to intervene as the teacher. He's explaining, I mean, monks don't get into this kind of arguments, don't get into this kind of conflicts. Now Buddha is trying to intervene, but they are not ready to listen, so Buddha abandoned. So likewise, I mean, always, I mean, if there is a chance, as a good person, and if you are a responsible person, if the other parties are, I mean, probable of listening to you, then probably you can try to settle the situation. And even if they are not listening, probably you can abandon, that can't help. And on the other part, as you said, see, if the conflicting party are completely beyond your, say, discretion, then probably, I mean, you find out, I mean, if I am trying to say, I'm getting to involve, then probably they may not listen to me at all. They may put problem into my hand, my side. So likewise, you can see the certain consequences, and you can probably back off and, I mean, leave them aside.
Yes.
Yeah.
Got the point. Thank you, Bante.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Sohani for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Avasarai, Bante. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. My question is, Bante, that now in the practice, questions arise in our mind. How do we differentiate between, this is the question arising due to our the practice, and like in the lines of wisdom, or is this a question arising because of my doubt?
Yeah, that is also a good question. So that's why, I mean, we need to understand whether it is it due to doubt, or is it really the wisdom? That is something. I mean, it depends on the. It's very difficult in a way. Because that's why these upakilesas are extremely difficult to recognize. Now, if it is anger, you can easily recognize. This is anger. If it is lust, we can immediately recognize. If it is, jealousy, we can immediately recognize. Because they are already in the unwholesome side. But the point is, when doubt arises in disguise of wisdom, it appears like wisdom. So we want to check, we want to see, we want to verify. So likewise, it is arising. But underneath, what is available could be doubt. So that's why we need to carefully handle. We can't say immediately we will be able to recognize that is the doubt and differentiate, okay, this is doubt, this is not wisdom. So I can't say immediately we can even do it. But slowly, probably, as we are seeing it, as we are noticing it, say as in your assume that you are continuing your practice, and one day say you were able to get some amount of results, and another day probably after that another day you are not getting some amount of results what is expected. Probably now you are even doubtful about the practice, doubtful about the method. But now you can recognize, okay, about a week ago, using the same method, I was able to get some result, but not today. It does not mean that the method is wrong, but the necessary conditions are not available. So likewise, I mean, at that time, if we promote this particular doubt, then probably even we might abandon the method, but it is not the wisdom. We need to verify, okay, the same method I have practiced for quite long time, and it has produced fair amount of results now, but today it didn't. That doesn't mean the method is wrong, but something wrong somewhere else. So rather than I being doubtful about the method, I better find out those other conducive conditions. So likewise, we need to recognize how things are happening at the given moment, and then only we better either continue it as an investigation, either as a wisdom, or we need to understand, okay, whether it is a doubt. So it's very difficult in a way. Case by case, we need to handle it.
Thank you. And that's where I suppose we can question it from a Kalyana Mitra.
Yeah.
But because there's a danger of creating maybe really unwholesome, like akusala karma without our knowledge because of our doubt?
That also can happen. Now, say for example, now when Venerable Mahasisayado introduced the method rising and falling. So many people start doubtful about it because it is not available in the book. Many Sri Lankan monks opposed it. But fortunately, like Matra Sri Nyanarama Mahathero, Venerable German Jnanaponika Mahathero, so they actually started practicing it. Rather than simply telling it is not available in the book, they start practicing it, and now they understood, okay, it's available in the book, but not in the same words. But it is simply a part of it. I mean, say book has mentioned about the various postures, so this rising and falling is another subtle part of that. So likewise, you may continuously, whenever you are in practice, you can understand, okay, this is also producing result. And if one has practiced several methods, and he know, say, using Anapanasati, what would be the result he got? And assume that he is trying with rising and falling. If he get the same result, then one can say, okay, both techniques are correct. Without practicing it, if one is simply, for the sake of not being available in the book, if one is simply criticizing the method, so that may be not the wise approach. So likewise, depending on the situation, we need to analyze and see, are we really doubtful based on, not based on proper ground, or are we simply wise based on proper ground? So likewise, we need to recognize, depending on the situation.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite you to Devi for the next question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, now you, the Buddha, I mean, encourage people to do Samatha Bhavana. I mean, though the wisdom develops via the Vipassana, he still encourage people to do the Samatha Bhavana. Is that right, Bhante?
Yes. Actually, the point is, to what extent? So that's the point. Now, sometimes Buddha mentioned, okay, you need to, we'll discuss that also, maybe in the future, there are certain suttas where certain Brahmin come and ask from Venerable Ananda, so what are the entry points for, say, getting enlightened? And not just one entry point, Venerable Ananda explained series of points. So each and every individual juncture can become an entry point to Vipassana. So that's why, we can't say you need to practice to the level of Arupa Jhana that you need to turn to Vipassana. You can't say you need to practice to the level of fourth Jhana, you need to turn to Vipassana. And you can't say you need to practice at least first Jhana to enter Vipassana. Rather, Vipassana itself is a process of generating five Jhana factors. You know the jhana factors, vitakka vichara pitisuka ekaggata. So those jhana factors are available even in the vipassana. So that's why Venerable Mahasi Sayado explained vipassana jhana. Probably you can remember in previous time we discussed that little short. Say even in vipassana these jhana factors are available. So you can't say that you don't have jhana. That's the point. Now say you are continuing satipatthana and you are now being able to recognize various feelings, even subtle feelings you are able to recognize. So at that moment, one can argue you are in first jhana or second jhana or third jhana. Because all the necessary, jhana factors are available, depending on how many jhana factors, depending on their strength, you can define, okay, whether you are in first jhana, whether you are in second jhana, or whether you are in third jhana. So therefore, we can't say jhanas are only available in samatha.
Yes, Bhante.
Yes.
So my question is, I think that I start with samatha because I just like to calm my body and then, then I go into the vipassana.
Right.
But I have I don't know whether... It's like there is a combination of
Samatha and Vipassana, because you know all these beautiful colors and all that come, and that doesn't come in Vipassana, so I'm told. But I just watch the rising and passing away or whatever comes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you see these beautiful colors and all that, you see they rise and pass. They're changing all the time.
So correct.
Impermanent. So
correct.
I see the impermanence.
Correct.
And also these beautiful waves, they come and go. I mean, they change. They're changing all the time. So impermanence.
Correct.
And then I'm sort of the observer. So I know that I have no control over this. So it's just the anatta.
Correct.
So I see all of that. The dukkha, of course, I don't really experience. Like, I mean, I don't feel that sadness at all when I'm doing the bhavana. So,
actually, that is not the point. Actually, it is not that the sadness that we need to understand as dukkha. The dukkha, dukkha has different definitions. Actually, three categories Buddha mentioned as dukkha, dukkha, viparinama dukkha, and sankhara dukkha. So continuously, there is some amount of dukkha available because of, say, bodily sickness, aging, and all these things, and pains, and all these things. There's a certain amount of dukkha available. On the other hand, when things are changing continuously, still some amount of dukkha is available. And the most important part is the sankhara dukkha. Because of our own constructions, how we prepare a self and that causing dukkha.
Yes.
So if we can recognize that, slowly we can stop that.
Yes.
So I think that would be the most important part when it comes to dukkha. So how one can recognize this sankhara dukkha? Our own contribution towards dukkha. Unnecessarily we are creating a dukkha.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I contemplate that outside the bhavana by because you can see that dukkha in everything that we do in you know, because this world is such that there is a lot of dukkha in a subtle way, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I contemplate on that because that's just an essential part of the vipassana. Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah, we can say yes, yes.
But then also you just said about the balancing. You know, you said we have to balance this the process of full the deep samadhi and the priti sukha.
Mm-hmm.
You said we had to balance it. Can you just give me an example, like you know, you had to balance it, of course, but how do you you say my mindfulness? Can you just give me an example of that, please?
Yeah, I think now this is particularly happened for the, say, newcomers. So they are trying so hard and they are in a way kind of a struggle and they are continuing, but there is no success. But as they are continuing like that for some time, assume that one day, I mean, due to some accident, the balance has happened. Not that they knowingly did that. Say, things have become balanced so very, really well. It's a kind of an accidental process. And as a result of that, say that everything was successful. Now they become overwhelmed by that success because they don't know how to, you know, maintain that with an equanimous mind, because they were struggling so hard for a long time, and today it has become so successful, and they become really overwhelmed by that happiness, elated by that. So that's why Buddha giving a very interesting simile there, where someone was searching for an entrance to the hidden treasure. But all of a sudden, not just one entrance, he found five entrances. So you can imagine what a kind of a overwhelming, happiness could arise in one's mind. All this time he was searching. Immediately, not just one, he found five. Likewise, in our practice also, we were, practicing so hard. We didn't expect any kind of success because every day very much like failure. But immediately, one day, everything become really successful. But this very success now become a kind of a distraction, kind of a overwhelming type of pleasure that we don't know how to handle. Later what happened is, now the success rate become more and more. You know now how to make it successful, and ultimately, the success itself become another event. So you are now slowly become equanimous. and the samadhi also become more into the equanimous, not much into the pleasure and all this rapture, but rather you are becoming more and more mature. That's why even in the samatha side, how Buddha slowly abandon rapture, happiness, and ultimately one become equanimous. So that is the most say peaceful, mature kind of state of the mind.
Yes, Bhante.
Yeah.
But but the happiness also comes, no, Bhante. You know,
can.
I don't know whether that's vipassana happiness. Then that is vipassana happiness. Is that what you're telling me?
Maybe. I mean that also depends. Now sometimes say mind is so calm, serene. So how, I mean, when one is continuing vipassana, now we may come even to a situation whether we can't even differentiate whether it is samatha or vipassana, because they are very beautifully
exactly.
blended.
Exactly, Bhante.
Then
that,
we don't,
that's what I was trying
yeah.
to say.
So then actually it is not necessary to name it whether it has come from samatha or whether it has come from vipassana. Because it's a kind of a very mutually supportive process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Bhante. Because in the past, I did a lot of samatha, and I think that's why it's all the time coming.
Right.
But it's okay. It doesn't matter. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Because I find that combination is a very powerful effect. Because
yes.
I think for us as lay people, you have to have some happiness also, Bhante.
Definitely. I mean, that's why Buddha talks about piti sambojjhanga, passadi sambojjhanga. I mean, all these things are very, very positive mental qualities where one becomes so calm, relaxed, happy. So that is one part of the practice.
Yes, because when I was doing samatha, I even just in the lay life, I used to suddenly get this waves of happiness, which I don't get now, and it's okay.
Yeah.
But it was not an unpleasant, it was a bit pleasant situation. But
definitely, definitely. So that's why, I mean, if you can remember when Bodhisattva, when he was abandoning the self-torturing process,
yes.
he remembered how he, as a young kid, he entered the first jhana. He now think, or now decide, okay, Why am I being afraid of that first jhana, that jhanic happiness?
Yes.
So that's
yes.
how he abandoned the self-torturing process. And then he came back to the moderate kind of, say, partaking food and everything. And now he is getting to the, say, Majjhima Patipada. Now he's,
yes.
I mean, he's starting the making use of that samatha practice as well. So I also therefore think, so samatha and vipassana, I mean, one can say you are practicing samatha at the first and now you are practicing vipassana, but ultimately they too start supporting each other.
Exactly. They are complementary and we just, it's okay to let it be the way it comes. You
exactly.
know, we don't have to interfere. No,
yeah, yeah. We don't need to purposely stop that happiness. But
yes,
here actually what Buddha mentioned as the imperfection is sometimes, you know, I mean, particularly for the beginners, so when they first come across that happiness, they don't know how to handle it. Then they become overwhelmed by that. But when you are continuing with your practice, then it becomes just a part of just the practice. I mean, you may not consider it as so important.
Yes, because
yeah.
the plain vipassana can sometimes bring you, and I have felt that, I have experienced that also, and then I cut down my meditation and everything for a while because I found that it was bringing me to a state of like a hopelessness,
mm-hmm.
Which was quite distressing, Bhante.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by hopelessness?
Like as if there was nothing to look forward to. That everything was not. There was nothing bringing happiness, like
mm-hmm.
that kind of feeling. Mm. You know what I mean, Bhante?
Yeah, yeah. But the point is, now you need to little be careful here. Now, when you are continuing vipassana, this is another, you know, desireless state, appanihita. The state of appanihita also has some similar tone. Say you understood, okay, no point of trying to find out happiness through any kind of a conditioned process.
Yes.
So as a result of that, you are abandoning things, and now your mind is more inclined towards the unconditioned.
But I was not feeling happy at all, Bhakti. I thought I was going to miss this depression also. So I cut down my meditation and I just led a normal life.
Right, right.
And I felt better after that, Bhakti.
Right, right. So that's why, I mean, we need to find out properly whether we have gone through proper vipassana, we understood the impermanence, and we understood that the mind is the whole conditioned phenomena are constantly subjected to this kind of impermanent process. So we went through that gradual development of understanding, gradual development of wisdom. If we have gone through that step by step, then we probably can understand, okay, so the disenchantment could be a result of the practice. Could be a result of the practice. So that also has to be properly handled. You know, sometimes there are stories that say in the commentary, say certain monks, when they got that disenchantment, so they won't even to disrobe, they won't even to abandon the method, they won't even to abandon the monastery. So likewise, it can be a little overwhelming, imbalancing kind of a situation. The teacher is more mature, he understand, okay, this is the process going on in his mind. I better little stop the process. I better ask him to prepare a kuti. I better ask him to do another duty, so that again he has some amount of happiness in his mind. And Buddha himself,
yes.
And Buddha himself mentioned about it in the process where panidhaya bhavana, apanidhaya bhavana. You know, in the apanidhaya bhavana is what we call satipatthana based vipassana. There, Buddha mentioned, sometimes your mind become little dry. At that time, you better take something which is more, say, peace in the mind. It's a lot of peace in the mind. So you take that temporarily and you practice that. Say, Buddha Anusati, Metta. So likewise, there are other samatha techniques which is even helping to uplift the mind. Your mind become now little balanced again. You are energized again. You are happy. Then Buddha mentioned, okay, now again switch to vipassana.
Yeah, so I'm very careful now, Bhakti. I don't want to overdo, and I just do it, and I just try to balance it, and I feel better for that, you know, because we have to survive in this world also, no, Bhakti. In a family life, you know, you have duties to do, and you can't just get into states where, you know, it interferes with your family life.
Correct. That's why, I mean, when we are doing gradually, slowly, patiently, then your mind becomes slowly, patiently mature, and it is capable of handling both worlds.
Exactly, Bhante. Exactly. Because... We can't have this gati mano, Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go with the flow. Isn't that right?
True. Because that's why, I mean, now when one becomes an anagami only, one can say, okay, now I can't live a typical normal household life. I have to very much even though I am a householder, now I am like a monk. So that way one can say. Only when one becomes an anagami, because now he doesn't have any lust, any anger. So, I mean, leading a typical household life may not be possible for him. But till that, one can continue the typical household life. I mean, there are situations, say there are people who are living a household life, but not involved in the sex and all these things, because they understood it's a more gross form of satisfaction, and all these things are there.
Because now Visakha lived a full
Sotapanna.
She lived a full life, and she fulfilled all that.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is enough for us.
That's the thing. It depends on your practice, and the practice will tell you. Rather than we try to imagine things. It's a matter of slowly continuing one's daily practice. So the daily practice will help us to understand as we are developing wisdom. So what is the way that we need to lead our lives?
Of course, Bhante. We have to balance, and we have to be, you know, we are living the Dhamma, and we are walking on this path, and we are doing our best. That's all we can do, Bhante.
Yes. Yeah.
Under the circumstances.
Yes.
Under the circumstances. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah. Teruvan Sarnai.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. I believe that's the last question for tonight.
Yeah.
Bhante, do you need help with reciting the transference of merit?
Sorry, I didn't get you.
Because I heard you coughing, do you need me to...
Great. If you can do it. Yes, sure. Please, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you, Bhante, again. So we've done quite a bit of merit. During this past 1.5 hours of listening to the Dhamma. So let's transfer our merits to those in need. Oh, sorry, Bhante, I don't know if I'm reciting it correctly. But,
okay, you can try, by the way.
Everyone can just, you know, follow along with the
Fine.
Meaning of the transference of merit.
Yeah.
Imina punya kame na mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana patya akasata tabumata deva naga mahetika punyantam anumoditva chiram akantu sasanam akasata tabumata deva naga mahetika punyantam anumoditva chiram akantu desanam etavata cha amehi sampadam punya sampadam Sape deva anumodantu sapa sampati setia eta vata ta amehi sampatam punya sampatam sape buddha anumodantu sapa sampati setia eta vata ta amehi sampatam punya sampatam sape sata anumodantu sapa sampati setia Idame nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idame nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idame nyatinam hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kame na mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu ya vanipana patia. Imina punya kame na mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana patya imina punya kame na mame bala samagamo satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana patya sadhu sadhu. Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, thank you, Teruvan Sarnai.